anti-copyright activism, and it serves two purposes. You may have seen that we built up a small exhibition upstairs, which is called Public Library, and it was curated both by Inka Arns and me, and all the artists who are now here present on the panel are also present in the exhibition. So what we would like to do in the first 15 minutes is to give you a brief introduction into both the exhibition and our background thoughts about the exhibition, why we conceived the exhibition of the exhibition the way it is right now. And this should take no longer than 15 minutes, and after that we want to plunge right into a discussion about the status quo of art and copyright versus anti-copyright. And we hope also to strongly involve you as the audience, and we will speak about such things as the history of copyright critical aesthetics and activism in art in the past decades. We will speak about specific media, and we will speak also about the issue whether copyright as such is good or bad for artists. So I will start just with the background thoughts, and after me, Inka Arns will present the exhibition with some examples and some brief introductory notes about the single works. What you see here in the projection is unfortunately a very bad reproduction of the original Merz painting by Kurt Schwitters. The reproduction is so bad because the painting got lost, and there is no other reproduction than an old black and white photograph. Some of you might know that Kurt Schwitters was a prominent artist attached to the Dada movement, but he created his own brand of Dada, which was called Merz. And this branding came from this picture, where you see here in the bottom left corner the letter Merz, and this letter, I can also show you an enlargement of this letter. Was actually taken, the scan is not better than this, it was actually taken from the logo of a bank which still exists today, and it's a German bank called Commerzbank. And you also recognize that the typography is almost still the same. So this is an appropriation, taking a corporate sign and making a picture out of it and creating a whole art movement out of that appropriation. So here we have an interesting use of corporate sign of pre-existing material in art. And of course it's very typical for the modern art of the 20th century, for the aesthetics of collage, of ready-made, of taking prefabricated materials and integrating them into artworks. But I think it's not limited to modernism, but it's much older in fact. Think of literature, for example. The classical definition of literature in the antique poetics is that it's imitation. And literature was not supposed to be original, but it was supposed to tell the same mythical stories over and over and again. Or think of, for example, visual arts, even in the Renaissance, which was using traditional codified visual images and using them again and again. It was also produced in workshops. We know that a Rembrandt picture is not really a Rembrandt picture, but it was produced together with his pupils, and often they would also reference or take material from older or other paintings from the same period. The same is true, of course, for music. We don't have to go into sampling and use of material in contemporary music, but also we can investigate the music of Johann Sebastian Bach, for example, and see that he used motifs from folk songs, from church songs, and so on, and also motifs by other composers. There was just a free use of material. And if you also look at cultural studies, which researches these traditions, then you see that each brand of them has developed their own research terms. For example, literary studies speak of intertextuality, referring to the use of similar motifs or similar even portions of text in different literary works. Or art history speaks of iconology, regarding the reuse of images in throughout art history. So from that, we could conclude that copyright never was really important in arts. Art, in a way, stayed outside the copyright system. It took always a very sloppy approach to intellectual property. Yeah? In most of the cases, much like science, I think. Yeah? In science, ideas were typically not copyrighted. A mathematical formula, a proof was not copyrighted but could be freely used. And in the arts, there used to be, or in most of the cases, there was also very liberal use of things produced and things being reused. But that's still different from an aesthetics or a program, artistic program, which is decisively against copyright. And I think this is not even true for Schwitters. Schwitters used all kinds of different materials, but he never spoke out openly against copyright. So if we speak about art which is decisively against copyright, we probably have to start with the late 19th century. I hope you can read it. It's a little bit low here on this print. There is this famous saying by Lautréamont, a late romanticist poet who was very much perceived by the surrealists and the avant-garde of the 20th century, who said, "Plagiarism is necessary. Progress implies it. It closely grasps an author's sentence, uses his expressions, deletes a false idea, replaces it with a new one." And if you now say, instead of an author sentence, you would say a programmer's code. This almost reads like a definition of free software, for example, or open source, or open content. And there have been other arts movements who have referred to this citation, who have used it immediately to shape a more decisive anti-copyright politics, such as the Situationist International. Inke will talk about that briefly because the Situationist International is also in our in our exhibition. All their publications had explicit anti-copyright notes in the imprint. Also in the recent years and decades, there has been art which took inspiration from the Situationist International and also spoke up against copyright. Lloyd Dunn is representative of that. We will speak hear more of that later. And, of course, since the 1990s, digital net art has very strongly engaged with that problem. So one could say that something that was a minority position within art history has become broader and broader and more popular and has a much more become a much more urgent topic now than it used to be in 1870. Why is this the case? I just have a preliminary theory. I think with the internet, the art steps for the first time out of protected spaces, like, for example, museums. Corporations didn't really bother about what was going on in museums and whether somebody, like I will show you just quickly, somebody like Andy Warhol was using, for example, Campbell's soup as a painting, but Cornelia also has to say more about that in her video lecture. Listen to her video lecture upstairs in the exhibition and you will hear something also about the copyright problems Warhol ran into with his works. So, but with the internet, if you put this image onto a website, it's no longer clearly in an art space. And then Campbell Company could be could become angry because somebody uses their copyrighted and trademarked signs. So, also, if you use something like the Commerzbank logo on a website, you might get into trouble with Commerzbank, much more likely than if you use it in an art museum. So, It seems that through the internet, as a space where art was no longer separate, copyright issues have become much more pressing, much more urgent, and that maybe this tradition of sloppy use of signs, sloppy copyright, where you had a tradition of recycling and reusing within art, as soon as it stepped into the internet and into digital media, for the first time really had to face serious copyright issues and had to kind of catch up with the history of decisive anti-copyright aesthetics as they are coming from Lautréamont and the Situationist International. This is a preliminary thesis I have. Maybe we have to discuss it later on the panel. This is just my proposal of how historically these things have developed. And now I would like to pass over to Inke and let you hear more about our exhibition.